Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life, a program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Robert McFarland, author of the number one international bestseller, Dear Boss, What Your Employees Wish You Knew. He's also the president of Transformational Impact, which is a leadership development consultancy, helping companies improve their employees' cultures and making them productive and profitable. He's also a board member of the National Religious Broadcasters, an organization of which I used to be a member. Robert, welcome to LifeQuest.
Thanks so much, Dwight. Good to be here.
I found this very interesting, but let me ask you this question. Why this book at this time, in your opinion?
Why this book at this time? You know, I think that if I've seen a lot of anything in the news lately, it's really about how we have seen life being compartmentalized and how we have seen people having their Sunday life separated from their Monday through Friday life, and they're not living. They're living as people of compartmentalization as opposed to people of integrity. And I think what we've seen as a result of that is we've seen that I can do whatever I want in my private life and it won't affect my business life. But we've seen, especially as of late, we've seen a lot of that which is in the private becoming public.
Yes.
And as a result, people are being called on the carpet. That which has been whispered in the darkness has been promoted from is proclaimed from the rooftops, and as a result, there's been a real problem in our culture. So what I see here is that we really need to have a realization: there is no difference between the secular and the sacred. There is that the two are combined, and as a result, that needed to be said in a business context, and that we needed to be living lives of integrity, not compartmentalization, but as integrity.
And there might be some who hear this, Robert, and they say, well, wait a minute, am I supposed to start spouting scripture on a daily basis? That's not what you're saying. You're looking for principles.
Exactly. You're exactly right. It's not about preaching to people. Mm-hmm. It's about living what you believe.
Yeah.
And so that if you say you believe what the Bible says, well, why can't that affect what you do Monday through Friday? Why can't it affect your work? Why can't you be acting like the person you say you are? And so that's really what it's about, is really how can we fuse biblical principles into a workplace environment?
I was just right in the first chapter here, you mentioned in detail a survey that you did. And if I can just kind of put it down to one thing, or many employees just say management doesn't get it, and so and if they ever worked, they don't remember.
The survey was really enlightening. So as you said, I mean, the book is not just a fusion of biblical and business principles. It's really a research-based book. So as you're identifying, I went out, had a research firm go out to, as it turned out, 589 people around the country, different ethnicities, different socioeconomic status, different industries in which they work, different regions of the country. And I asked one open-ended question. I asked, what is the one thing you wish your boss knew that they might not already know?
Yeah.
And that gave some really interesting information that we were then able to pull out into four basic things that employees really wanted their bosses to know.
Yeah, and could you let us know on what those four things were?
Yeah, sure. Really what we're looking at here is we're looking at there is an incredible desire for, well, actually, first of all, let me tell you what's not on the list.
Okay.
Okay, what was not on the list is pay. That was not, this was an open-ended question. People could say whatever they want, whatever was on the top of their mind, and pay was not it. So what's interesting, though, is that the things that really did pop were, number one, at 17%, was insufficient appreciation.
Yeah.
So appreciation is key, that people don't feel like they're being appreciated at the workplace. Secondly, actually the second one is a tie for three-way tie for second place at 15% was inadequate morale. Mm-hmm. So people didn't feel like there was a team spirit at the office or at their workplace. There was incompetent management, or at least the perception of incompetent management, that people, that the boss, as you said, just didn't get it. The fourth one was improper communication. So there wasn't good communication going two ways between management and employees.
Something popped into my head as I was reading here, because you make this statement. It's, you know, at some point, as a manager, and then you look at the people who the team leaders under. You said, you know, maybe you just got to fire the whole team and start over if they're not getting. And I thought, I was a pastor for 26 years, Robert, and I went to, as a young pastor, I was sent to San Diego to a new church for me, and they had all kinds of problems, and part of it was with their parochial school. And I went there, and it was a small thing, four teachers. And in a few months, I said, they got to go, these teachers. Well, our area-wide education directors, no, this can't happen. But it did happen, finally, and we tripled the size of the enrollment very quickly, you see. I came up with quite a bit of, but I was young, and I thought, well, it just needs to get done. And so finally, they gave me a chance. But that's what I thought there, and it's interesting. And as I'm reading your book, I also realize, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is not just for people in leadership, though that's its main focus, it seems. Employee, I should say.
Yeah. So somebody who is underneath somebody else and isn't the big boss, I mean, yeah, definitely people can learn from this. And actually, one thing that you had mentioned, Dwight, that I wanted to go back to was about, you know, coming in and firing everybody. That may be the case that's needed, to, you know, in some situations. But at the same time, though, I want to clarify by saying that management is there, or leadership is there, to manage, to lead.
Right.
I mean, and that they're really the ones who need to be taking the bull by the horn. So they can't just say, well, everybody's the problem if they have been the ones creating the problem. Now, granted, I think if you came in into a new situation and you're like, okay, everybody's got to go because you realize that the current system that you came into was bad. But right. In this situation here, it's like if management is the one that created the problems, well, they can't blame their people for the problems that they created.
Exactly.
They have to be the ones to own up to it.
And so chapter two goes into one of these main conclusions here, and that is insufficient appreciation. And providing that isn't that hard, is it?
No, it's not. You're exactly right. It's really about just affirming the humanity of somebody else. I mean, treating other people the way you'd want to treat them. It's really pretty simple. It doesn't have to be about increasing pay scales or increasing the amount of time off or sick leave or whatever. But that can be part of it, but it can be just, you know, how are you doing?
Exactly.
I'm concerned about you. I understand you've been dealing with some stuff at home that's tough. We just want to be here for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not rocket science. We're humans. We just need to act like
it. And you talk about some of the very human issues that come on the part of a leader, and that is when talking to an employee, sometimes there's this kind of looking down or disdain is the term that you use. And employees pick that up.
Oh, yeah. People will definitely pick up if there is a superiority complex or a distancing perspective that management doesn't want to get into the issues or just kind of look down at other people. You can pick that up in your tone of voice. You can pick it up in body language. It's easy to do that. At the same time, though, a leader can turn that around and say, you know, I can be conscious of that. I can be conscious of my body language. I can be conscious of my tone of voice. And then say, you know, I really want to make sure that what I'm really communicating is what I want to be saying.
Yeah.
Because the words we say are only 7% of the communication. That really 38% is tone of voice, 55% is body language. And so that's so important in making sure that we're really communicating the full story that we want to say.
And a lot of people live under a certain level of anxiety in their lives, as you referenced, sometimes at home. And so we kind of take a button and sew a vest on it. As an employee, the boss didn't seem to smile at me, or he said hi in just an absent-minded way. I know I'm going to get fired. We, you know, that's the end of the thought processes.
Yeah, I think that sometimes employees can actually go overboard in terms of understanding things. I heard a great story from somebody once who said that he was a boss, and he had just come from a Mexican restaurant, and he had massive indigestion from after what he had just eaten, and the employees looked at his face and said, oh, gosh, he must hate me, or he must not like me, and he's like, no, he just needs to find a bathroom. So, it's one of those things where we can read too much into things, but at the same time, though, if we're more intentional about how we communicate, those kind of things can happen less often.
Again, these principles are what I would hope we recognize as basic Christian principles and characteristics. In chapter 8, you say caring produces tenderness. And I put a question mark by the heading. And then I thought, you know, in some cases, this is a character change that has to happen. But it's also a basic concept of Christ.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we just need to be caring for people. I mean, and really what it's about is making sure that we are doing what we can to genuinely love people. Now, I know that's kind of strange in a business context. You know, how can I be lovey-dovey with my employees? Well, no, that's not the point. The point is that Jesus talks about having an agape love. I mean, that it's a social or moral love for people. It's a concern for their welfare. And it talks about how we should love our neighbors as ourselves. I mean, it's not a romantic kind of thing. It's that we care for them. I mean, that if we're genuinely concerned about our own welfare, we should be concerned about the welfare of the people around us. So that's really what we're talking about here. And if I really care about my employees, then my profitability will sink. Actually, that's not the case at all. John Mackey, who is the co-CEO of Whole Foods, has made it very clear that by the business practices that Whole Foods has taken over the years, they've grown to a $1 billion company by treating their people right.
Yeah.
And so he gets that. I mean, even from somebody who maybe not necessarily from the same faith perspective that we are, he gets it, and he applies things that are scriptural principles in how he does his business. And so that's the kind of thing that we should be talking about. We should be doing things that will honor the humanity of other people, take care of them, and watch out for them, and then actually our profitability will actually increase in the process.
Robert, I've probably retired 2 or 3 times. A couple of years ago, I had new landlords, and they raised the rent $250 a month. And I said, I need to get some income. And I walked into the local Ace Hardware store. And the manager that I'm working under now, taking care of nuts and bolts and meeting all kinds of interesting and strange people, is fascinating to me because these things, I'm as you're talking, I'm plugging them into what my manager has said to me and how he approached, how he closed the door and said, do you really like it here, Dwight? What do you like? Or when we come up to a difficult situation, I know all of you people here have jobs, and so I want you to have a job, and here's what it takes to make our store profitable. It is fascinating to what you're describing, but it is up to this. And as you say in chapter 15, values, that's a loaded word sometimes. So what do you mean by values here as an employer and as a Christian employer?
Yeah, the values are really how you do things. It's what you hold dear and how is that going to influence your actions. So, I mean, a team is going to get focused by the values that are espoused and lived by.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process of really understanding, okay, what are our values? What defines us as an organization, as a group of people?
Mm-hmm.
And how are we going to do things? How are we going to make our organization function? What will be the things that we always do? What will be the things that we never do? And once we isolate what those things are, we can start explaining them to everybody so to say, this is how we're going to do it, or that's how we're not going to do it. And then it's a process of actually living by it and really curating stories, curating ways that those values have been lived out. I remember hearing some stories about Nordstrom. And they became right. famous over the decades as a result of their customer service and how they would go above and beyond. I mean, just do ludicrously
yes.
In-depth things for going above and beyond. And they create a culture within Nordstrom where they would swap stories in terms of, well, this is what I did to go above and beyond. And what it did is it created a culture where people say, this is what's important. So they curate those stories so that people say, oh, this is what they mean when they say, yes. you know, using good judgment in all situations. And so that helps to create that kind of cultural consensus to really define what a business culture needs to look like.
On all levels of the organization. Yeah. About that same time, as I connected with the whole Nordstrom phenomenon, there was Lexus came in, automobiles. And it was the mm-hmm. same thing. It was just amazing to what extent they want to make you happy. And then that trickled down to other organizations, even like Mercedes, who at some point had said, well, we may sell you a car if you want us to. But all of a sudden, it had to change.
Right.
And it did.
Yeah, so I think that's something that we can learn from and realize that we need to be engaging as an organization with customers. And the way to start that is really having people within the organization be engaging. And so people who work for you in your organization will not be customer centric unless you are employee centric. Your team will not be having that emotional capacity to care for those around them if you're not caring for them. So it's really got what goes around will has to come around.
You talk about decentralization. Of course, everybody in the decentralization needs to have the same values and the same core understanding of service. You give the illustration of Moses in Scripture. Could you unpack that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, just like when Jethro comes to visit Moses, and Moses has got these people coming to him, and this long line of people trying to say, hey, can you resolve my dispute? And Jethro's like, look, dude, this is not a good way to do it. You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to wear all these people out.
Yeah.
You need to delegate other people who you can trust to make some of the smaller decisions for you, and what they can't decide, let them bring to you.
Mm-hmm.
So decentralization, letting things be decided on a lower on a level that's closer to the situation where it's happening, it makes more sense altogether because within the different clans there within Israel,
mm-hmm.
with the different tribes, they knew the situation better than Moses did, and so they could do a better job of resolving those disputes. Same thing with the different departments within your organization is that those folks know how to do their job better than you do. And so letting them decide things on that level within certain thresholds makes more sense, and then you can free you up to do things. I was amazed recently when my son was going out to visit some different businesses to ask for donations for a project.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really funny where there was he'd go to a grocery store,
yeah.
and to get a $25 contribution or less, that it had to be reviewed by a manager and
yes.
it'd take multiple days. Where there was another chain that he went to, and that right there on the spot, $25, they were authorized to be able to give a donation. It didn't
yeah.
matter who was there at the counter. And I thought, what a difference in culture.
Yes.
That here you've got this person has been authorized to make this decision up to $25, and it's done. Whereas this other person, this other organization, they've got to get a manager involved to make a $25 decision. Oh my gosh, what a waste of time in terms of all the other decisions that are really going to be grabbing at their attention. So I thought, what a better model that is right there.
Tell our listeners about the format of the book. At the end of each section or chapter, you have these questions, things like that.
Yeah, at the end of each chapter, I have some reflection questions, about three questions. At the end of every chapter, just kind of take things home and help people really make the content their own. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the book is really based on research. And so, then the first few chapters are really about okay, what's the results from the research, and some taking some actual verbatim comments that were made by people who were involved in the survey and then try to dissect them to see what that really is all about. And then we go into really solving what the issues are in terms of the paradigm of active leadership. Actually, I don't think I even mentioned what those concepts. To address the issues of insufficient appreciation, inadequate morale, incompetent management, improper communication, we really go into the concepts of tenderness. I mean, that solves the issue of appreciation and team, addresses the issue of the morale, and then the issue of the concept of trust deals with the issue of management, and then the concept of transparency will solve the issue of the problem with communication. So that's the central part of the book. And then at the very end, it's really about, okay, how can we take this home? How can we really make this practical? What are the concepts that you need to be able to be implementing now to really be able to drive this home and make it your own?
Folks, the book is Dear Boss, What Your Employees Wish You Knew by Robert McFarland. And let me tell you, it's a book that I am really enjoying and I think is practical for just everybody in being a Christian and yet it affecting all levels of your work. Tell us where we can get a copy of the book.
You can get a copy of the book on Amazon, and that's probably the easiest way to get it.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Well, thank you so much. And if anybody wants to learn more about the book, they can go to whatyouremployeeswishyouknew.com.
Great.
Or they can reach out to me at my consultancy at transformationalimpactllc.com.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.